Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And happy week before our 1 week anniversary of Haunt Weekly.
1 year.
1 year, sorry. Oh, yes, you were correct. I misspoke quite atrociously there, but yes, we are almost to our 1 year anniversary of doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
Not really.
Not really either. It's pretty incredible. You know, when we started this 51 weeks ago, we were not sure how long we would be doing it.
Right.
And how long our dedication to it would hold out. And we got the answer.
At least a year.
At least a year. Yes, it's held out at least a year. Technically, our first episode went live December 5th, 2015.
Yeah.
So we will have done 52 weekly episodes next week. Yeah. And of course, since it is a divisible by 4 week, it will be a news week. Now, technically, the 1 year anniversary happened slightly after it, but 52 yeah. weeks in a year approximately. Just work with us here.
Yeah.
All right. But yeah.
But that's next week.
That's next week.
That's not this week.
That's not this week. We're coming back to that next week, I promise you.
Yeah.
So, in the meantime, we've got a lot to go over this week. This week, the haunt visits are done, the haunts are closed down. Teardown is... Well, we're not talking about Teardown this week.
Teardown is on hold until family comes to visit here, at least.
Teardown is Teardown. It's not necessarily the smoothest thing in the world right now. But we're not here to talk about this week. But we've had a little time to process everything we saw, observed, and participated in, did, tasted, touched, smelled, etc. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take a little time to wrap it up.
Yep.
And so that's what we're going to be doing for the bulk of this week's episode. However, I will warn that some of the stuff has been covered in previous episodes. We'll touch on it in a little bit. But we're going to just like cruise through that stuff and largely direct back to our previous episodes as is appropriate.
Right.
In the meantime, we have to do our usual shtick of conference reminders. And this week, we've revamped them pretty big.
Yeah, you've added a lot.
You were like, hey, where's this conference I heard of? And you didn't write us about it. Shame on you. That is your fault, not mine.
And if you don't hear it this week, please send it.
Yes, once again, we are on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. We are on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. We would love to hear from you. Give us your suggestions, your topic ideas, your conferences we need to add, etc., etc., etc. So here, shall we kick this party off?
Yeah.
Would you like to begin or would you like me?
I started last week.
All right, I'll start this week then. Coming up January 14th through the 17th, right here in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Convention Center. It is the Halloween and Party Expo. It's 350 vendors. There is a requirement for a business verification. Should be no trouble for most of our listeners.
Right.
And you can go through the very, very simple, easy-peasy registration process at HalloweenPartyExpo.com. And if you are going to this expo, and you should, there are 350 vendors, it kicks butt. If you are going, please let us know. Also, it is a free expo.
Yes.
It is free.
Yes. That's a big thing.
That's a big thing. It's free. So,
if you can get here, you can have drinks with us.
Yes.
And attend this free.
Yes.
Obviously, drinks with us is more important.
Yes, obviously. That went without saying, dear. That was completely superfluous information. But yes, if you are coming to New Orleans, please do get in touch with us. Let us know. We will show you where the locals drink, and we will promise you a place to drink on the cheap.
And some of the best ice cream you'll ever have.
We can hook you up, man. Just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
All right. Next, we have Corn Party. This is January 17th through 20th. It's going to be in Hawaii. It's at multiple locations. It's for operators of corn mazes, and you can find out more at themaize.com.
I get it. Maize is a synonym for corn. Oh, boy. All right, moving along. It is HauntCon, January 26th through the 30th in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Sheraton Nashville Airport. They will be doing tours of Haunted Hell, Nashville, Nashville Nightmare, and Slaughterhouse. Learn more, including getting some early bird ticket prices, at HauntCon.com.
And then, March 23rd through the 26th, it's Transworld Halloween and Attraction Show in St. Louis, Missouri at the America Center. The early bird discount of $50 off is through March, so basically if you get it before you show up at the door. new this year is the Escape Room City, a zone all about escape rooms, and find out more at the HAASHOW.com.
HaShow.com. That joke will never get old, I promise. It will just never get old.
No.
But also from the Transworld people, coming up May 1st through 5th, it's the Room Escape Conference and Tour in Niagara Falls, New York, right there near the Canadian border. This conference is a bit of an international flavor to it, as you'll be visiting places across the border.
So be sure to bring your passports.
Or your passport card or whatever the hell they have. Anyways, it's at the Niagara Falls Convention Center and Event Center. They'll be doing tour of Five Wits Escape Games Canada and the Locked Up Escape Games. The conference is on the 1st through the 3rd. The tours are the 4th and the 5th. You can learn more, get tickets, all that good stuff at roomescapeshow.com. Not escape room show, room escape show. Get the order right.
Well, I'm sure they would have if you hadn't put the wrong order in their head.
Room Escape Show. Room Escape Show. Room Escape Show.com.
Okay.
Moving on.
May 12th through the 14th, there's the West Coast Haunters Convention. This is going to be in Portland, Oregon at the Doubletree Hotel.
As opposed to the Singletree.
Yes. Or the Tripletree.
Mm.
Yeah, it's even better, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tour of Hour to Midnight Room Escape, Labyrinth Room Escape, and Escapism Room Escape. I'm seeing a lot of escape rooms in our haunt.
Yes, this seems to be a big theme of the conventions this year. Yes.
All right, so it's hauntersconvention.com, and that is haunters with an S.
Convention.com, yes, indeed. And then June 8th through 11th, you have the Midwest Haunters Convention in Columbus, Ohio, at the Greater Columbus Center. They'll be touring the Scaratorium as well as other tours, TBA. Learn more at Midwest Haunters Convention. Once again, it is plural, Midwest Haunters Convention.
Yep. And then August 4th through the 5th, 2017, obviously, it's going to be Haunt Fair. And we tried to learn this name last year.
Failed.
Or earlier this year, I guess.
Failed again.
Rancocoma, New York, Clarion Hotel, Haunted Bus Tour on Friday. That is a bus that goes around to haunted places.
Yes.
Not a haunted bus.
Yes. I still want to do a haunted bus attraction now. That does sound awesome.
I went to one as a kid. It was okay.
Oh, it was okay.
Right. Haunt-fair.com, F-A-I-R-E on
the
that
weird
fair.
Renaissance fair spelling affair, yes. If you will. All right. Then after that, on August 25th through 27th, that's Halloween and Haunt Fest Show in Dallas-Fort Worth at the Mesquite Convention Center. Crystal, you know that area a little bit better than me. Where the hell is the Mesquite Convention Center?
How should I know?
I don't know. I thought you, like, were there for a time.
Yeah, I lived in that area for a time, but that was years ago.
All right. But anyways, they will be doing an escape room trip to, and I am just quoting this from the site, Jason versus Tater and a Walking Dead Zombie.
Yeah.
That literally is from the site. Crystal was in the room when I wrote all this down. And you can learn more at HalloweenandHaunt.com. Maybe you can get some clarity on this escape room trip.
Yeah.
By the way, tickets are limited on that to just 20 people. So
be one. So if you're interested in that, get your tickets early.
Jason versus Tater and The Walking Dead Zombie. The Walking Dead Zombie is the part that sounds really awkward there.
I think
we're going to ignore the Tater thing for the moment.
Yeah, and it's versus, so it's not like it's three separate attractions.
No, it's one attraction. It's weird.
Yeah, because usually, you know, some places that have escape rooms will have the different scenes and setup, like, you know, the collector or the jail cell or, you know, this or that or the zombie escape room. But they never put it as versus.
Which is a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah.
So anyways, season wrap up. The season's wrapped up. Podcast is over.
Yep.
All right, we're done.
Good night. The yard's almost empty.
Anyways, yes, the season is over. We've had a little time to process things, and we've got a lot on our minds from this past season. So we wanted to take this episode to sort of talk about some of the broader points and the broader strokes of what we saw over the year.
Right.
And we covered some of the points in really, really big detail in previous episodes. Like, and we mentioned the interactive and the artisanal haunts episodes.
Correct.
And we want to revisit those briefly, but like I said, we're largely going to defer to those episodes on those topics. In fact, I think we only reserved a few minutes to even talk about that at all.
Well, yeah, with the convention list being so long, how could we reserve
more? Yeah, no, we've only got 40 minutes left in the podcast now. But yes, so we will have more to cover as the year goes along from this season. There's a lot to think about. This is just kind of the quick pass. And I wanted to start the talk with marketing.
Okay.
Because marketing is the first thing I notice every year about haunt season.
That might be because you have a marketing background.
Well, not only that, but usually you see the marketing before the haunts even open.
Well, yeah. That's also true, too.
Because typically speaking, like around here, mortuary is the one that opens up first. We usually see mortuary ads a couple of weeks before that. So we'll see mortuary ads, whether they're billboards or TV commercials or YouTube interstitial ads or whatever, sometime early September.
Yep.
And that's like usually the time I start panicking and realizing I need to work on my haunt more. Need to kick that in overdrive. But, you know, the point remains, so marketing is the first thing we see, and overall, in our region, and once again, everything we're talking about is our region, and our region covers southern Louisiana in general, southern Mississippi, and a little bit north of us, and basically like a 100-mile radius around New Orleans, and you've got our area.
Yep.
I don't think we ever went further than that this season. No. Last year we went to St. Louis, but we're not going to talk about that this year.
Well, no, and we wouldn't have been able to see their marketing anyway.
Yeah, so but our,
we wouldn't have had the daily exposure.
Yeah, and that's part of it. Is we're say some of the haunts we went to, because they were more than 40 or 50 miles out of our range, away from us, we still didn't see their marketing.
Yeah,
like I didn't see a single thing from Rise.
Yeah, maybe a flyer or something.
All right, I don't recall seeing much from 13th Gate either, actually.
No.
So, but overall this year, in our little humble city, marketing stunk. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Okay, the mortuary and the House of Shock are the two big haunts in our city.
Yeah.
They're the two big baddies. They're the ones that control the marketing. They're the only two that really can afford to do a mainstream advertising campaign of any stripe.
Right.
And they both just seemed so lazy with their mainstream marketing.
Yeah, the mortuary was really funny because I was looking for last-minute ideas for scares to put into our haunt and was watching a lot of home haunt videos trying to get inspired. And one of them came up with a familiar clip.
Yeah, the intro was...
The intro clip on it was very familiar. And I'm like, that's the guy from the mortuary commercial.
Yes. And we looked, or I looked, I checked a couple stock video libraries. I'm responsible for the video editing that we do for, like, Garbatoire and elsewhere.
Right.
So I kind of had a handle on where to look. And I went and I found the exact same clip for use by anyone. And the thing about this, the stock video is a way of life for haunted attractions. I get that. But, yeah, the mere fact that they were sharing a very core element of their marketing with, you know, YouTube home haunter videos...
Right.
It's kind of a problem. And it also was a problem because the clip in question featured an old man that was creepy and graven.
It wasn't an old man, no. It was a creepy monster dude.
It was some kind of zombie-like
thing. It was
thing.
Like a no-face kind of
thing. Yeah, humanoid type. It's kind of hard to describe.
It is.
It's very tough to describe. All of our descriptions are right and wrong at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's a very distinctive appearance.
Yes.
Even if we can't, like, articulate what it is.
Yeah.
It was very, very memorable, very distinctive. I'm pretty sure we're both picturing the exact same thing. And that character was nowhere in the mortuary.
No.
Nor in the home haunters. But that was okay because they were just doing how-to videos.
Yeah.
We weren't really expecting to see the character there.
Right.
So, yeah, it was really, really frustrating. And because the commercials felt like every haunted attraction commercial has.
Mm-hmm.
For the past how many years?
Several.
Dozen?
Yeah, a long time.
It seems as if with the video and radio ads, haunted attractions, at least in our area once again, have gotten very, very formulaic.
Right.
They follow the pattern, and it's kind of weird because, like, movie trailers, we always make jokes about movie trailers,
mm-hmm.
how they use the same formula over and over and over again.
Right.
But We've seen some really creative movie trailers in recent years.
We have.
I've not seen a haunted attraction ad that makes me say that.
No, but at the same time, you know, we've talked about how the haunt industry in general lags behind regular mainstream media because the websites are often out of date.
Oh, yes.
You know, online ticketing could be so much better.
Yes.
So there's problems overall with keeping up with current trends.
I agree. And we'll get more on the websites in just a minute. And the other one, The House of Shock, didn't do much better with their mainstream marketing efforts.
Right.
They actually, and this is really insane to me, because, okay, 2 years ago, they announced they were closing.
Yes.
Big deal. People flew in from all over the country to see The House of Shock one last time. Tears were wept, blah, blah, blah. Almost immediately the doors closed, they started launching online funding campaigns to try to reopen.
Right.
The funding campaigns fell short, but they got an investor in who stepped up, and they were able to reopen last year.
Yeah.
So last year, they put together a show kind of in haste, admittedly, and they called it The Resurrection.
Right.
Which made some degree of sense.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be dead, they're back, resurrection, this is the theme, back from the dead, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That made sense last year.
Yes.
They reused the theme this year.
They did. All of the marketing said, we're back.
No kidding, we're back.
Like, it was a new thing. Like, they weren't open last year. Of course they were open last year. We saw them.
We went.
Yes.
I mean, so it was very, very, very confusing. And kind of frustrating, too, because they had by far the largest traditional media presence. They had ads, I know most of our audience isn't from New Orleans, but as you drive down the main highway in New Orleans, the CBD Elevated Expressway that goes all along, you know, what we think of downtown New Orleans and also across the river into the West Bank side.
Right.
You drive right past both the Superdome and the arenas where the Saints and the Pelicans play. And the arena has two giant LED billboards.
Yeah.
Like unfathomably large LED billboards.
Yes.
And they actually bought, those billboards rotate.
Yep.
But they actually bought significant amount of time on those billboards and had the giant resurrection thing on it.
Right.
And
Scungy.
Seaman Scungy was on it.
Yeah.
They bought it too. At least Seaman Scungy made more sense. Because, you know, okay, maybe it didn't.
But no.
Good try, John.
good try for giving them the benefit of the doubt, but no.
Dang it. But the point of the matter is, they had the resurrection stuff there, so it was like, realistically, the most hard part of the city, giant billboards, with this, which is not technically being honest. They weren't resurrected this year.
Right. Because they were still there last year. And the problem with Scungy is, as we've mentioned before, He's a sideshow character. He's not the main guy. Put the main guy on your merch.
He does not have the recognition.
No, he doesn't.
That other characters from the House of Shock have.
Yep.
Now, I will say this, though. As bad as the traditional marketing was, and like I said, there were only two haunts in the New Orleans area that did a great deal of traditional marketing.
Right.
And I will offer one thing. We are cord cutters. So we do not see a lot of television ads.
Yeah.
We do see some. We have like PlayStation View and things. So we do see some.
Yeah.
But we also see a lot of YouTube ads and so forth. And,
right.
And the Mortuary especially did a lot with YouTube this year, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Their ads were very prominent on YouTube. But it was once again that same ad.
Right. It was the same one. And
it's really frustrating for me to see these haunts spend what's got to be insane amounts of money.
Right.
Buying this ad time.
Yeah.
And then not investing to make sure their commercials, their branding, et cetera, are up to code.
Right. Because, I mean, your advertisement for your haunt should promote what I'm going to see in your haunt that year. And if it doesn't, then there's an issue.
Yeah. It was insanely frustrating for me because I come from a marketing background, and one of the things I strongly believe, like the old woodcutter story, if you have, you know, 6 hours to cut down a tree, spend the first four sharpening your axe.
Yeah.
Type of mentality.
Right.
It's that idea that you should focus on making sure you have the sharpest blade possible and just reusing using stock photo, reusing last year's work. That's using a dull axe.
Right.
That's a very dull axe.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I would like to have seen that.
Yeah.
But like I said, as bad as that was, the guerrilla marketing was, I thought, significantly better, especially for the House of Shock.
Yeah. Yeah, they kicked much butt in that area this year.
Yeah, they did these hearse visits. They would go to Saints games. They went to Rocky Horror showings.
Right.
They went wherever they realistically could and had partnerships and connections.
Yep.
Did appearances with their line of hearses, handed out tickets. They also had contests and local papers.
Right.
They basically used connections to get all of the opportunities to either be there physically or to, you know, get free advertising.
Yep.
And I'll say this. I spoke with a lot of people in line. I spoke with a lot of people just on the street about these haunts and the marketing. And every time I heard the exact same thing. And that is, they heard all the buzz was from this stuff.
Yeah.
The giant billboards on the arena?
Yeah.
Nothing.
TV ads? Nothing.
Nothing. I heard no mentions of those.
Nope.
Nobody gave one hoot about any of that.
Nope.
It was really, really interesting. And I think I actually spoke to about a dozen people over the year on this topic, and they all said the same thing. Oh, yeah, you know, the hearse visit at the Saints game. Everyone was talking about that.
Yeah.
That actually got a lot of play on Facebook, too.
Yeah, it
people
did.
That, you know, we know that are not haunters at all.
Right.
We're talking about it on Facebook.
Yeah, because they were at the Saints game, and the hearses were there, and the big demon angel thingy came out of it.
And it was awesome. It was great. And that got buzz. That got attention. They got people talking.
It was something interesting and new.
Yeah. You know, so, I don't know. Something to think about. Like I said, I really, really wish when it comes to mainstream media, we would focus our time sharpening the product we're putting on the airwaves or on the billboard.
Right.
Rather than just, you know, trying to shoot it out there to as many people as possible. It's kind of bizarre to me that we do that. Smaller haunt promotion, I thought, was pretty interesting this year.
Yeah.
A lot of smaller haunts promoted themselves basically like bands.
Yeah, or like we do.
Yeah.
But yeah, flyers put around town.
Yeah, like we learned about...
The flying circus I learned about on campus.
We learned about the haunted puddle from a flyer somewhere else.
Yeah, at a coffee shop.
Yeah, at a coffee shop. We learned about at least two or three haunts this year solely from, you know, from flyers being posted around or being left at bars and coffee shops and whatnot. And that's pretty unusual, I've got to be honest. I don't recall that being much of a thing previously.
It wasn't. And I think that we have a lot to thank the burlesque community, because we have a thriving community here for that. Mm-hmm. And I think because the places that haunts were advertising were also the places that those shows advertised. And there was a lot of cross-pollination between... Yeah.
Both performers and the audience thereof. I think there's a lot of cross-pollination both ways.
Yeah.
And one other thing we saw a lot of was the power of Facebook on this one. You mentioned the Fly Circus Space one.
Right.
We found out about it from a flyer on campus.
Yes.
Our friend Kyle, who we went with, was invited to it on Facebook.
Right. From a friend who was working there
or was somehow involved with it.
It
was confusing, but his relationships are always confusing.
I'm sure they're not confusing for him.
I hope not. But the point remains, he learned about it from Facebook.
Yes, and from somebody who wasn't in the haunt community.
No. And so that is something else that we see a lot, both in the burlesque and the musical community here, is this use of Facebook to constantly push a product, tag people, share, get it out there to those that might be interested. Because that's the thing, is you reach out to your immediate audience and encourage them to tag or to share it to people who would be interested. It's targeting.
Yep.
It's human intelligence targeting. So there was a lot of that going on. And it was really, really great, because that's like a form of word of mouth advertising. It's just taking place over Facebook.
Right.
It's like, instead of me, you know, calling you up or stopping you at the water cooler, I'm just sharing something to you in a Facebook message.
Right. And if you aren't creating Facebook events for your event, why the heck not?
Yeah,
because people will invite their friends to go with them through Facebook.
That is a really interesting lesson from this year for me, is the power of those Facebook events.
Yeah.
We saw it with our haunt. We did one for our opening night.
Right.
But like the Fly Circus Space one, which is the one I think made best use of Facebook.
Yeah.
They published it because it was a one day only thing. They published it. They put it out as they both created like a page for it, then created an event within it.
Right.
Then people were sharing both the page and the event and getting it out there. And like I said, they were inviting people. It was really spreading the word for it, helped make the event successful.
Yeah.
Also interesting was Indie Radio, Low Power FM Radio, Community Radio, as it's often called. And you can't see the air quotes I'm doing here.
No, they can't, but that's okay.
Yes, Community Radio played a key role. A lot of people were introduced, for example, I'm forgetting the haunt name already. The one that was closed.
Oh, the Haunted Puddle.
The Haunted Puddle. God, why did that slip my mind?
I don't know.
I must be having brain farts. But the Haunted Puddle did a lot of promotion over independent radio. They did the community radio stations and so forth.
And you know this.
Yes, I know this because I was on one of the shows.
Yeah.
Which is, that was unplanned. I was there talking about my day job.
I know. We were already going to go to the Haunted Puddle because we found their flyer at a coffee shop.
Yes.
Next to House of Shock Flyers, actually.
But, you know, a lot of people did learn about that. And here's the thing that's kind of weird about that, is radio is making a resurgence.
Yep.
And this low-power FM, this community radio, really taps into that millennial, quote-unquote, hipster element.
Yeah.
And it seems to be very appealing to that community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something definitely to think about, something that I hadn't, you know, really contemplated before this season.
Yeah, and I will say that I did hear radio ads for both Mortuary and House of Shock on mainstream radio, because I'm probably the last person who listens to radio.
Okay, can I ask you a question then?
Yeah, sure.
What'd you think of those ads?
They were always played back to back. Always.
All right, well, you've heard the Mortuary ad. Here's their competitor, quote unquote.
Yes, and in fact, whenever I would turn the radio on and it was in the middle, I couldn't tell which one it was.
Yeah,
the end.
And I say competitor, even though I'm a strong believer that haunts are not really competitors with one another on the whole.
No.
But still,
we have bigger fish to fry with, like, Voodoo Fest and stuff.
Yeah, I'm about to say, the bigger issue is other things to do than haunts.
Yeah.
That's the much bigger problem. It's just like, you know, you don't go to just one car lot. Most people don't go to one haunt. That's why car lots open up next door to one another all the time.
Yep.
But the point remains, yeah, from a radio standpoint, two haunted attraction ads back-to-back sounds kind of weird to me, but yes. But the fact is, you just said there was nothing distinctive between them.
I think they even used the same announcer.
They probably did. There's that one guy that we met at HauntCon who does like 90%
exactly.
of the haunt ads. And this is, once again, it's just like how there was that one guy that did like 90% of movie trailers.
Yeah, and it's pretty close to the same voice, actually.
Yes, it is. Yeah, well, guess what? Maybe we should do like movie trailers have done and have learned to make them more distinctive. Just a thought. But anyways. But the whole point of all this, obviously, is to focus on keeping costs low while reaching the target audience.
Right.
All right. And the final thing to wrap it up is websites were terrible.
Yeah.
I say they're terrible every week on this podcast. Haunted attraction websites are still terrible. Next week on Haunt Weekly, we're going to discuss how terrible haunted attraction websites are.
Well, apparently we're not doing the news after all.
But no, it is one of those things. I mean, the large haunts had the online presences, but they're online and with online ordering. But let's face it, the online ordering was not pleasant. I cannot think of a single haunt I attended and bought tickets online for where I went, yay! This is a great exploring experience.
No.
I can't think of a single one that's true about. They usually weren't fair, too, because usually you got charged fees online. You didn't get charged in person. So what's my incentive to buy online?
Right.
The only one that offered an incentive to buy online was the Mortuary. If you had coupon codes and so forth in the early nights of it,
right.
You could lower the price enough to make that fee not an issue.
Right.
But anyways, yes, that's rough. All in all, smaller haunts, if they had a website, it was basic.
Yes. Most of the smaller ones only had Facebook pages.
Which, you know, that's one of the things... We just talked about how great Facebook can be for promotion of a haunt.
Right.
But you still need your own domain. You still need your kingdom.
Right. And if you want to know why, there is a video by a gothic rocker named Voltaire.
Yes.
Who talked about what happened when he put all of his eggs in one basket.
MySpace.
Yes. Called MySpace. And 1 year sold, you know, thousands of copies of his new CD. Went to do it the next year and only sold a couple hundred. Because everybody had switched over to Facebook.
And he now, had the next new, no presence there.
Yeah. And the next new thing is probably out there already. We just don't know about it because we're old.
Well, and even if the next new thing isn't out there, even if Facebook doesn't get replaced.
Right.
Facebook's policies can change. Facebook's right. sizing, Facebook images, the way they format stuff can and will change.
Yeah.
You are at the mercy of Facebook's design, their policies, everything.
And how they promote you.
Exactly. And yeah, you're definitely at the mercy of the Facebook algorithm. Holy God, you're at the mercy of that.
Yeah, because that changes all the freaking time.
So get a website, guys.
Yep.
All right. Now, we focused a lot in our previous episodes, like on the artisanal interactive haunts.
Yes.
On the smaller ones. So let's quickly spin through the larger ones.
All right.
That we didn't cover. What do you say? House of Shock, we just mentioned their marketing. Thoughts on them? I will say I think the show quality improved from last year.
Yes.
They had only a couple of months to really put together a major haunted attraction. They did very well last year.
Last year.
This year, they took the whole year. They improved it. They honed it. They added detail. They had great makeup. They had great set design. Last year, it didn't feel incomplete.
It felt pretty incomplete. There were pieces of sets missing.
But this year, it felt complete.
Yes.
It felt 110% there.
It felt polished.
Throughput is still a problem.
Yeah, as we've stated before, as long as there's no way to skip the stage show, it's going to be a problem.
And here's the thing that I don't think House of Shock or some other haunts don't think about, is there are two costs for every haunted attraction.
Yeah.
First is money.
Right.
How much is the ticket cost? That's the obvious one. But the other is how much time am I spending getting there and doing the things other than going through your haunt?
Right.
Basically, the time I spent at your haunt, not haunting.
Yeah.
And House of Shock, you know, has a pretty good ticket price, I think, but they have a very, very high time cost.
They do.
And because as we calculated previously, we are able to, House of Shock is basically like 20 minutes from us.
Yeah, that's being generous.
It's
15 to 20 minutes.
15 to 20 minutes from us. We can, from door to door, from our driveway to driveway, basically, we can either go to the House of Shock and come back, or we can go all the way 80-plus miles to Hammond,
yep.
do the attraction and zombie paintball, and then come back.
Yep.
Same amount of time.
Yeah.
And that's just crazy.
It is.
So, I think for House of Shock, for me, the next year's going to be the bigger challenge.
Yeah.
They've got to find a way to iterate, do something new and improve. The problem they had prior to their closure was that they let things get stagnant. They'd kept doing the same show. We'll see how they iterate and what they change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see if they change anything next year, if it's marketed differently, and if they don't change, how long it takes them to change.
Yeah. Or how long it takes for the audience just to...
To fizzle out,
because that's going to be the problem.
Yeah.
Mortuary, I thought they did a pretty solid job overall. They were doing their 10-year celebration.
Yes.
And it was pretty good. Brought back some of their best characters. One of our favorites from the past was there.
Right.
Yeah, it was a really, really good haunt this year. Very solid overall. I do have concerns about their space.
Well, there's always concerns about space, because they don't have any room to expand, really. Right.
They are in a historic building. They are beset on all sides by land they can do nothing with, i.e. an actual cemetery.
Yes, it's an actual cemetery. Those aren't just props. Please don't go crawling through the cemetery.
They are beset by all sides by land they can do nothing with.
Yeah.
So they are as big as they are going to get.
Right.
And that's going to be difficult for them to expand, for them to raise their ticket prices. And that's a problem because they are already technically the most expensive haunt in the city.
Right. On the other hand, though, you know, it's kind of nice to know how big you're going to be for planning purposes.
It is.
Like, I know how big our garage is. I know it's not changing size, you know?
Yeah, I get that. But the problem is, as a customer,
well, yeah,
when you've got much bigger haunts like the House of Shock, charging less money.
Well, yeah.
That's a marketing problem.
That is a marketing problem.
How do you
problem.
Position yourself in that market? And I don't have an easy answer for that one. In fact, the most common complaint I heard or read on their Facebook page and elsewhere was basically people saying, don't bother going to the mortuary. The House of Chalk is cheaper and bigger.
Yeah.
And yes, both of those things are true. I do argue that the time cost of the House of Chalk is real.
Right. Because you do wait longer there.
Yes.
I will say that they are two very different experiences.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And that
they're hard to compare.
Yeah, they're hard to compare. And if you want, if the mortuary wanted to set themselves apart, they have to find a way to make themselves truly unique.
Yeah.
That's the only place you can go to get this experience that they would give you.
Well, they had a little bit of that previously with like the Ravencroft thing.
Right.
They had a really good narrative going, had something unique to them, and then that kind of fizzled out, and
right.
He came back this year. He was the one we were really excited to see.
Yeah.
We saw him, like, nearly hug the character and all. It was kind of sad.
Yeah.
It was Ravencroft!
Fanboying a little bit over there, John.
No. But no, we were like so happy to see him. It was great. So, I don't know. Yeah, they do have to figure that out. That's going to be a tough part for them.
Right. Also, for full reviews, we've got all the full reviews.
On Garbage Horror, yeah.
Yeah, on Garbage Horror.
I'll put the YouTube link below. Those were the sort of on-the-fly reviews done almost immediately after going to these.
Right.
And we're going to do a Garbage Horror wrap-up where we go more in-depth in each haunt.
Right.
This is, like I said, just a quick spin-through.
Yep.
Rise was actually really impressive.
Yeah, it was definitely my favorite of the big-tier haunts. And I have trouble putting them with the big-tiers, but they are.
Yeah.
They're definitely a competitor now.
No, then they have three attractions, any one of which put them in a big tier.
Yeah.
And I think the reason we don't, like, mentally do that is because they're way the hell out there in Tickfall.
Yeah, I think it is because they're not in a city. All the rest are located within cities.
Yeah. And Rise is the unusual one. It's located, and basically the only way to describe Tickfall is it's outside of Hammond. Oh, where's Hammond? It's north of New Orleans across the lake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that helping? No. Okay.
It's basically an hour from anywhere that you've heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an hour to Baton Rouge. It's an hour to New Orleans, effectively.
Yeah.
A little bit over an hour to New Orleans. But yeah, I mean, they suffered heavily from the flooding in southeast Louisiana this year.
Right.
They recovered and managed to open up the main attraction on time.
Yes.
And the Asylum, their new attraction this year, opened a few weeks late.
Right.
But they did manage to get it open this year. And both of them were just solid. I mean, going through either, I had no idea they were damaged.
No.
Granted, I don't know how flood damage would look in a haunted attraction.
Probably pretty cool.
But the point remains, they were able to get back up and running. And I've got to say, the Asylum, for the major haunts, was
right.
the most unique experience we had.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. That's going to be a game changer, I think, for this area. Because other people are going to have to compete with that.
It is something you cannot get at any haunt. And basically what it was the owner of Rise saying, okay, we want a new attraction, one with lower throughput.
Yeah.
We can't put through as many people in a night, but we can provide a truly unique experience, what they call a soft touch experience, an interactive experience.
Nope.
And, hey, it made a bunch of haunters nope out on the night we went, so that was fun.
Yeah. No, and it was a really good show.
It was. And the actors in that were, oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. They were amazing. If you're going to even... Yeah, I really do.
I want to take acting classes from those guys.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, I really do think that this is going to be a game changer for the area.
Yeah.
And if any of the other major haunts have not been and gone through the Asylum, what are you guys thinking?
Because yeah, go visit
this is the next big thing.
Take a spin through it. You'll love it. It's a very interesting experience. And here's the thing. I mean, I know we talked about this in the Interactive Haunts episode, so I defer a lot to there.
Yeah.
But I really think this type of stuff may be a better long-term game than escape rooms.
Right.
Because if the escape room fad goes away,
yep,
then what are you left with other than an empty escape room? But an interactive haunt could always be interesting. This can always be a new experience for a haunted attraction. So something to think about.
Yeah.
So yeah, the only complaint I have about Rise is the use of haunt pay.
Yeah.
It's admittedly a minor complaint.
Well, and this was their first year using it, so we don't know if it's going to get better next year. But there were some bugs to work out.
There were some bugs, but I really don't like that credit card charge.
Yeah.
That really annoys me. And as a customer, it really upsets me that customers who are you know, paying the same amount, are paying less money to get the same experience, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm being penalized for bringing a credit card. And I understand there are transaction fees, and I get that. Hey, I run a business, too. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated by it. But that being said, there's transaction fees with all types of transactions,
right,
even if they're more hidden than like with cash.
Yeah, and the thing is that they could roll that into the price.
Yes.
They could market it and advertise it as being part of the cost.
Yeah.
And there are other ways to push that. Yeah, and then it wouldn't feel quite as bad.
Yeah. So anyways, that's the only gripe. Overall, Rise, great experience, great haunt.
Yeah.
Nothing bad to say. 13th Gate. Usually one of our favorites. This year, not a lot changed.
Yeah, there wasn't much that did change. And the things that were changed weren't very impressive.
Were misses all around, I think.
Yeah, there wasn't anything that struck me as completely awesome.
No. There was no new thing that really blew my mind. I got rid of the goddamn beehive. I'm happy about that.
Yes.
But, yeah, other than that, they really did not invest a lot of time in it. It shows. Retroactive recommendation, don't go to the 13th Gate in 2016 if you went in 2015.
Yeah.
It's still a great haunt, though. If you've never been to the 13th Gate, by all means, go.
Yeah.
It's still an absolutely breathtaking haunt. The set design alone is worth the price of admission.
Right.
It's a beautiful, beautiful haunt. They deserve their money.
Yeah.
This wasn't a lot new this year. They say the money and time went into the escape rooms. I trust them.
Yeah.
Definitely looking at the site, it seems that way. So, yeah, we might be having an escape room run.
Well, upcoming. We probably will be doing an escape room run or two in December.
Yeah, we got to get a crew together. Because it can't just be the two of us, so we're going to get at least a
three. Well, we'll have four people here.
Yeah, and that's enough for her.
Yeah.
Well, we got to get a team together. It just can't be the Jonathan and Crystal show going through the escape rooms.
No.
We need help. Which is one of the drawbacks of an escape room. It is definitely a group activity.
Yeah, and sometimes you want to be able to pick your friends in those.
Yeah. And if your group isn't large enough, like Crystal and I do all these haunts, just the two of us usually.
Right.
And one of the things is we do usually pair up with other groups.
Yeah.
We're the weirdos in line. They're like, we need two people to go with these and group here. Yes, pick us.
Yeah.
Go with them, you know. We're in the back of the line jumping up and down, waving our arms. That's us.
Right.
We're those enthusiastic people. So, yeah, wrapping up the small haunt real fast, a bit touch on those again. They really did a good job focusing on niche and interactive experiences.
Yes, they did.
They were more likely to encourage interaction with the actors. They were more likely to use touch. They were more likely to control the space as a means of extending the walkthrough time.
Right.
They were not concerned about throughput as much.
No.
And as a result of that, they had, a stronger artistic focus.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, part of it's that they were put on by theater groups.
Largely, a large part of it. Yeah, and that's just it. It was a combination of a variety of arts. It was circus arts,
right,
theater arts, performing arts, visual artists.
Yeah.
We saw some visual artists at the Haunted Puddle.
We did.
Dance.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So, yes, it seems like this is an area that artists of all stripes are pushing into. And coming up with some really interesting experiences that sort of lie outside of what we think of as the traditional haunted attraction experience.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if anything is incorporated
yeah.
into mainstream haunts from these.
Absolutely. I think there's definitely some opportunity, and I think the Asylum at Rise might be the first really good indication of how to do that.
Right.
Because it's still very much a mainstream haunt in terms of build.
Right.
In terms of how it's operated, mm-hmm. but it incorporates these actor-driven elements to it that you would not normally see. I mean, yes, all haunts are actor-driven. That's not what I'm trying to say. But as far as the interaction with the actors,
yeah,
it's much more diverse. It's much more direct. And it's not something you typically get from a mainstream haunt. You're not usually encouraged to have dialogue with actors. You're not usually encouraged to play out a scene with them.
Not really, no.
Crystal may try sometimes.
You may also.
Okay, yes, I may too. But the point remains, that's something that I think Asylum did very well, sort of blending like one of these smaller haunts and a mainstream haunt.
I figured it out.
Well?
They told me to play out scenes, and so I did the opposite. It's like telling me not to smile.
Okay. Yeah, she doesn't listen to directions really well.
I just have an independent spirit.
Yeah, and meanwhile, at one point in the Asylum, they gave you medicine, like in a little paper cup, like you would like an actual some. Here, take your medicine. I get a little paper cup. I immediately kick it back without thinking.
Yeah.
I get outside. I'm talking to the owners. Like, what? By the way, what did I take? Yeah. And they're like, you took that? Yeah. It was a Tic Tac, but seriously, you took that?
Yeah. That was funny.
So, but anyways. So yeah, like I said, less concerned about throughput, less concerned about mass market appeal. They're able to take some bigger risks. And with that comes some big hits and comes some big misses. Yeah. But I got to say, it was interesting either way. I will add this finally. We did have one haunt get shuttered this season.
Right.
The Haunted Puddle. We mentioned them a few times as podcast. I forgot their name once as podcast. I don't know how. Have you just had like something that you were just like thinking about a minute ago totally seep out of your brain? That's what that was.
Yeah.
They were closed before Halloween week, and they were only going to be open for 2 weekends.
Right.
And they were shuttered before their final weekend due to permitting issues. Long story short, they didn't have them.
Yeah, they didn't have them, and they need some help in that area, and with safer building ideas.
Basically, as we were going through it, we're sitting there going, how is this fire code? How is this fire code? How is this, you know, fire code? Because even though, yes, I know we have a tiny little garage haunt, but we do build the fire code compliance.
We do.
Solid walls, fire retardant spray on absolutely every goddamn thing. Fire retardant paint, proper fire suppression systems. We do everything.
Yeah.
We try to do it all as required for the space we have.
Right. It's not the little plastic walls and props and spirits in our haunt.
No, we take this seriously.
Spirit, not spirit.
We build to code. And the reason is, A, we believe that that is the safest way to build.
Right.
And B, you know, when we do work with pro haunts, and when if we do decide to take this haunt pro, we don't want to have to relearn anything.
Right.
We have nothing, you know, new to pick up. We're already used to doing this, basically.
Yeah.
And that's something that I know a lot of home haunters run into, is that they start out violating all the fire codes because they're not being checked.
Right.
And then when they do decide to go pro, it's crash core city.
Yeah, it's like, woohoo, I can do anything I want. And then it's like,
the fire marshal's like, no, you can't.
Stop it.
But yes, this was done at a local artist space.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, the thing about it is this, they took some interesting risks. They tried some things. It was very experimental. Some of it I liked, some of it I didn't. It's a kind of a mixed bag when I think about the haunt. But seriously, people, get your damn permits in order.
Yeah.
If you're charging money, get your permits in order.
Yep.
It's that simple.
That is the lesson.
Well, anyways, wrapping it up, some final thoughts. The bigger haunts in our area, from the marketing standpoint, they seem to be stagnating a lot.
Yeah.
And in terms of the haunt themselves, even though most of them had really good shows,
right,
there was a feeling of not much innovative there.
Yeah.
And I think Asylum at Rise was the big shining exception to that.
It was.
That really was a very unique haunt experience.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be seeing our innovation coming from the smaller, newer haunts.
it's got to come from somewhere, and sometimes you get stuck in bubbles.
Yeah.
Where all you're getting is information from other people within your bubble. Well, and these are definitely outside of our bubble.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is, when you have a business that demands mass market appeal, when you need thousands of people every night to go through your haunt to break even, you can't take big risks. You have to do what you know works.
Right.
These smaller haunts, they're not as worried about that. They're able to make their budget on much smaller numbers.
Right.
They can take those risks.
Yeah. I do think setting up a small side attraction as one of those risks is a good idea.
And that is something we've seen elsewhere. And I mean, like 13th Gate is Necropolis 13.
Right.
Which operates kind of as an actor's playground style haunt. It may not be quite as experimental as the Asylum is.
Yeah.
But it is a very different attraction than 13th Gate.
It is. It definitely
it's
is.
It's outdoor. It's actor driven entirely.
Yes.
It is a very, very interesting experience in contrast to 13th Gate. It's just not quite as different as the Asylum. It still has, you know, the focus on clean throughput, still has the focus on assault, you know what I mean?
Right.
Not holding people, no interaction. It's not those things, but it's still very, very different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you have extra space and can open a secondary attraction, that may be your play space. That may be where you take those risks. That may be your BBC 2.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe where you do more experimental stuff. Huh. So, yeah, while I think these smaller haunts will be innovative, or where a lot of the innovation are coming from, they do have other challenges. Throughput, we keep mentioning. Permitting, obviously, after the haunted puddle.
Right.
Safety issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like I said, I keep hyping how Rise was this year with the Asylum.
Yeah.
I'm goddamn impressed they got the main attraction open on time after the flooding.
Right.
I'm really, really impressed with that. And then to open up the Asylum, which is such a different attraction than what we've seen in the region.
Yes.
And I know there are other regions. Like, I know, like, Eastern State Penn, in the Terror Behind the Walls, does something kind of similar.
Right.
With the very, very scene-driven, very actor-driven touch, but they're more of a heavy touch, but still.
Yeah. But it is an example of something similar to what the Asylum is.
It's a similar approach. But yeah, it's very interesting to see this. So I think we're going to see more of these hybrid haunts, mainstream haunts, but doing soft touch, doing more experimental things, not worrying so hard about throughput and trying to create a new experience.
Right.
So yeah. All in all, I think what we have to focus on in the next season is the larger haunts need to find a way to innovate, and I mean that both in terms of their marketing and the experience they provide.
Yeah.
Because, you know, rooms change, and makeup changes, theme changes, all that stuff changes, but the overall experience seems to stay larger the same.
Yeah.
And so hopefully we can find ways to provide a new experience that gives haunted attraction goers what they want, but at the same time, something that they can talk about and something that they haven't quite experienced before.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Well, any other thoughts now that we're done wrapping up the season?
No, that sounds good.
Well, as I noted, next week we are back with the news.
Yes.
As is usual. And also our 1 year anniversary episode. 52 weeks of this. Can you believe it?
Not really.
I certainly can't. But on that note, everyone, once again, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We are Haunt Weekly at both. We'll be hitting you guys with a very new website soon at hauntweekly.com. Check us out there. And in the meantime, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly episode 51 for the season wrap up for 2016. We will see you guys next week.